Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. Joining us now is Steve Paisley-Jordahl. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, everybody. How you doing?
Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, it was great. We spent the Thanksgiving with Heather's folks, and I'm required by my marital vows to say roll tide.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Ooh, you just separated yourself from a lot of people out there.
Again, it's not my heart.
You married into the family.
It's the law.
Listen, I was watching that football game.
You're talking about Alabama-Auburn.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Iron Bowl. And I really like college football.
Doesn't have to be your team.
No, I'll watch anybody play college football. I just love the spirit and the competition, and I grew up with it. So Thanksgiving weekend is it doesn't get any better than that as far as the college football rivalries.
Yeah.
So I watched the Ohio State Michigan.
That was a good game.
Game, yes, which Michigan pulled off that rivalry game. That was a great college football game. And then the Iron Bowl was Alabama-Auburn.
Yes, sir.
And that's generally a pretty close game, you know, and they have had a lot of crazy things happen in that rivalry. However, I was watching that game Saturday.
Yep.
And Auburn was they had to be a double-digit
underdog.
Underdog. I mean, they really shouldn't have been on the field.
I wonder.
With Alabama, yeah. If you compare the seasons that they've had. But yet, here we are in a rivalry game on the plains, as they call it, in South Alabama, and you have Auburn Auburn was leading the whole game.
Auburn was a 2-touchdown favorite, 13.5 points.
You mean underdog?
Alabama. I'm sorry, Alabama was, yeah.
Okay, I knew it had to be double digits.
Yeah.
And Auburn leads the whole game. And then Alabama scores on a Hail Mary. Literally a Hail Mary. Fourth and 31 with time running out.
Well, 2 minutes. There's a little less than 2 minutes to go.
No.
Yeah, because Auburn got the ball back and they.
There wasn't 2 minutes. It was under a minute, I think. But anyway, we can check that. But anyway, the point was that all those people who there's two camps of people in America. Those who think Alabama is blessed by God, or God's team,
right?
And those who think that Nick Saban, his real name is Nick Satan. That's because
you can pretty much divide the world into two camps.
Good authority that man has sold his soul to the devil.
The devil went down to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah,
the old brother war art.
But you know what? I had no dog in the hunt, as they say.
Right.
I'm not a fan of either school. I appreciate both schools, Auburn and Alabama, for their pageant.
And so does American Family Radio.
That's right. We don't care which team you cheer for, as long as you write us checks. We don't care. But I didn't have a dog in the hunt. I just enjoy watching that rivalry. But, man, as much as Alabama fans were elated to win that game in a miraculous fashion, some would say undeserving.
Or some would say it was devilry. Voodoo.
To watch the camera, the pain and agony and shock on the faces of those Auburn fans.
Because it was at Auburn.
I almost had to turn away from the TV set because you had all these little co-eds.
The pain and
with
suffering.
Mascara running down their faces. And I don't know, they were probably getting ready to storm the field. Because it would have been the biggest upset in college football this season.
Yeah.
Had Auburn beat Alabama. And here they had it in their grasp. And you would think, what are the chances of making that play? I'm guessing that's 1 in 50.
I think the odds are probably
higher,
even higher.
The ESPN's analytics, the computer had it at 99.9% Auburn was going to win.
Do you remember several years ago when Auburn beat Alabama on a missed field goal try? Alabama was
and
they ran it back,
for a touchdown.
Yeah, catch six or whatever they call it.
Yeah, this would have matched that in terms of
the drama.
I'm just saying in terms of it being an iconic game that they'll remember forever.
The Auburn fans are. They're going to remember that forever.
Called in sick today, Auburn fans.
I don't have a dog in the hunt, but I did feel bad for those fans because they were. It would almost been better if you'd lost 49-0.
Yes. If you lose like that.
If you lose 49-0,
middle of the second quarter, you know it's
happening. Yeah, psychologically, you can handle that.
In the second quarter, you're eating nachos and getting an extra
hot dog. You're saying, we knew he was going to lose anyway. But to be winning the whole game and then lose the very last play of the game against your arch rival on your home field.
I just want to say, after what Steve said, folks, you do hear that little announcement we make on our programming that the views expressed on
do not
this
necessarily
program
reflect
do
those
not necessarily reflect the views anyway, of American Family Radio.
So Steve married into an Alabama family, Alabama Roll Tide family, and they were celebrating on Saturday.
Being a good husband.
Yeah. All right. What do you got, Steve?
Well, I wanted to pay off on something. We were talking. You were very kind enough to ask me about the Christmas concert that our choral group did, Columbus Choral Society.
Yes.
And I promised you I'd bring a little snippet. So I'm going to play you. This is about 2 minutes. I got 4 songs that I condensed down in a little bit so you can get a sense of different types of song we did. Let's go ahead and hear Cut 10.
I will admit that is high quality stuff. We were joking around before Thanksgiving week, talking about the difference between a church choir and a choral group.
Yeah.
In terms of
the
you pretty much
type of music
and
quality.
Yeah, because now there are some outstanding choirs, but that was good stuff, Steve. Very very
Thank
impressive.
You. Appreciate you letting me do that.
And that wasn't specifically Christmas music, was it?
No, okay. It was a fall. It was It was.
I will say I started listening to Christmas music before Thanksgiving.
A lot of people are doing that.
I just kind of thought, you know what? I just feel like listening to some Christmas music, And so I've gotten into it early.
There you go.
So.
All right. All right. So are you guys familiar with the diagnosis, the psychological diagnosis of Munchausen by proxy? This is a little bit of a archaic term, but basically,
I've had that ever since I saw Wizard of Oz, and I saw the flying the flying monkeys.
Munchausen by proxy. That's right.
I am familiar with that. Yeah, but explain it to our listeners.
There are medications for that, though.
Is when a parent, usually a mom, this happens mostly with two women, make their child sick or pretend that their child is sick so that the mom can get attention.
Right.
That she's needed, that she,
and it's that's illegal in most states, isn't it?
I mean, well,
you can be prosecuted for
it. It's also known as medical child abuse or factitious disorder. But now they've coined another term. It's not yet in the DSM. It might not make it to the DSM, which DSM is the Diagnostical Statistical Manual, which psychologists use when it gives a code to every psychological.
These are recognized, diagnoses.
Yeah, when somebody has schizophrenia, there's a code, and that way it's a unified definition of what that condition is. Well, Transhausen by proxy is what they're calling this. Unlike Munchausen, this is when parents decide that they are going to make their kids or that they have transgender children by the bushelful. I mean, there's parents who have 2- and 3-year-old transgender kids, or 4 of their 5 kids are transgender. What are the odds?
Right.
That's what they say. You say when you have a vegetarian dog, it wasn't the dog's idea.
Right.
So
now it's in pop culture, especially with the Hollywood elites and the actors and actresses and that world, that's trendy. Right now.
Cher, Sade, Jennifer Lopez, Charlize Theron.
They all want to say, I got a trans kid. So feather in my hat.
Yes.
Okay.
You're so brave.
Applaud me.
Because you're applauding them. You're woke and you're.
Yeah, they want to be woke. They're proud of that. And so.
Now, this is not, and I don't know that it would ever be entered into the DSM. Because
probably not by that name, but yeah.
Yeah, but. To me, I think this is spot on, that's going on, that there are parents, and especially moms, not just limited to moms, but that there are parents who get gratification by having trans kids. And the problem is that, statistically speaking, most kids who are confused about their gender grow out of it.
Yeah.
And these parents may not be allowing their kids to grow up.
Or I think they're introducing the confusion to them to begin with. In a related kind of phenomenon, we for a while we've been seeing what they're calling sudden onset transphobia or gender dysphoria. People who were normal, usually teenage girls, who all of a sudden, you know, what one girl comes out and says, I'm transgender, and all of a sudden 7 others in the school do. And it's kind of, you know.
The percentage explodes suddenly.
For kind of the same reason. It gives the kids some kind of special status.
Yes.
And everything. But it's not just that the parents are confusing these kids, because this leads to the gender mutilation surgery. It leads to all of the drugs that they take to delay puberty. This damages children permanently.
Right.
And so I think it's worth noting. Bring that
maybe
up.
Maybe that will become an official diagnosis at some point, but I think we're still in the stage where we're seeing this play out, and maybe psychology and psychiatry will catch up after 10 years, but there'll be a tremendous amount of damage done.
And I think it's going to be the lawsuits as well that are going to kind of bring people around. You can't afford to be paying out millions of dollars to kids that you've ruined.
Right.
We've talked also for a while about the law enforcement problem we have in this country. The crime rates have skyrocketed in major cities, New York City, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco, Oakland. Oh, my gosh, they're having such a problem with crime there. And they have found out that over 2,500 New York City NYPD officers have turned in their badges so far in 2023. 7% of the force.
Wow.
Has
in
left,
1 year.
In 1 year has left.
And that's and the year's not over.
No.
You probably get some who will just
by Christmas, you know,
call it quits after this year and say, I got my X number of years in.
A lot of cops are quitting before they reach 20 years, but for certain, a lot of cops who finally reach 20 years and full pension say, I'm done.
Yeah.
And we're hearing it. New York City has gotten so bad that they have canceled their next three entering classes into their academy, police academy. They're not having entrance exams for 3 years because no one wants the job. And so no one's coming in to replace these cops. And these cops are working 10, 12, now, okay. 15 hours a day.
All right, so let me ask you this.
Yes.
That last part you mentioned, the entrance exams.
Yes.
Does that mean they are just not screening candidates coming into the police academies? Or they just aren't having police academy training?
They're not having police academy training.
Wow.
It doesn't mean that they won't take transfers from another department.
Okay.
A lot of these, I read in this article that a bunch of these cops have left NYPD for transit authority. So it's still kind of law enforcement, but it's not the NYPD. They're not facing.
That way they just get to watch people push folks on the subway track.
Right.
You know, and get to arrest.
Yeah.
Well, you're not having to go into neighborhoods.
No.
All your work is limited to the transit system.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is happening. They have the data for New York City, but it's happening everywhere.
Listen, street crime is only going to get worse in cities that do not punish the criminals.
Right.
That's just a law of nature.
Right.
And New York City, now there is a growing reaction to the non-punishment of violent criminals in New York, but I don't know if it's going to succeed or not, other than people leaving voting with their feet, so to speak, getting out of. We've had a lot of that.
Those that can afford to.
Yes, they can leave, but the city, these big cities are just, the crime is skyrocketing.
Yeah.
You're seeing open, brazen criminal activity, smash and grabs, where they go into these stores and just take what they want. Shoplifting is out of control. Big chains are leaving San Francisco, Philadelphia, New York, L.A. They're getting out. They're closing down their stores because they're losing so much money by shoplifting.
Now, let me ask you a question. What is a typical percentage of, let's say, New York City, where in any given year, you may not have that at the tip of your fingers here, but I'm wondering how 7.5% loss, personnel loss, compares to 1995.
I don't have it back that far, but this is the fourth highest number in the past decade, 43% more than the 1,750 who left in 2018 before the pandemic.
All right.
Well, and this is the other thing I'll tell you. The total number, they're saying the drastic cuts will reduce departments to just 29,000 cops by the end of the fiscal year 2025. That's 7,000 cops lost by 2025.
Wow.
And this is what they're saying. NYPD officers tell this person that's reporting they're afraid to make arrests because of the anti-cop climate in the Big Apple. And when they do make a caller, what's the point? We're shoveling against the tide because the bad guys go right back out on the street.
Oh, bingo. Until you get rid of the liberal district attorneys.
Yep.
I call them liberal communist.
Right.
District attorneys, those Soros-funded ones,
yep,
for example, until you get rid of those and you get law and order and punish the criminal,
mm-hmm,
then it's only going to get worse here. And this goes back to what we were talking about last hour. These folks, by these folks, I mean these district attorneys and these liberal lawyers and much of the Democrat Party, they view putting people in prison as a form of persecution against that person. It's a weird way of looking at the world, yes, but they do. They'll take a crime committed by, let's say, a 17-year-old, 18-year-old black male, especially if it's a person of color, are, in this case, a black male, for example, they'll say, well, that guy doesn't deserve to be in prison because he's probably been a victim of racial discrimination by whites. So we're going to let him walk free.
Yeah.
Right.
In the name of in the name of fairness and justice. You see how that works?
Yeah.
That's what they believe.
Yeah.
And so you get a that's why this is my own view, and I don't have studies to back this up. That's why you remember that white Marine guy who yeah. saved the people on the subway?
Yes.
They went after him.
But they did.
With a vengeance. Because the guy died that he had in the chokehold. You remember that?
Right. Yes, I do.
Well, it was shown that this guy who died in the
chokehold, yeah.
chokehold, who was an African American, was threatening people on the bus, and people were glad that this Marine stepped in to help calm right. the situation. Now it's unfortunate that the guy died, but he did, and what they did was now they're prosecuting the Marine for the white guy.
Yeah.
For you know, but if it had been a person of a different color, I'm saying they wouldn't have done that. They'd let him go. Now, you may say, well, that's reverse racism. What I don't know what you call it. I'm just telling you, this is how these cultural Marxists view the world. Predominantly, they talk about viewing things through a racial lens.
Right.
They view everything through a racial lens almost.
Well, what was the outcome, by the way, of that prosecution?
Is he still in prison? The Marine?
I
want to say still, look it up. I'm not sure, but I just know that, you know, with everybody being let go in New York City, and this guy who was trying to step in to help save people's lives, they felt threatened.
But remember the bodega owner in New York City
as well?
Yeah,
same thing.
Yeah, if that had not been public.
And he was an ethnic minority.
Yeah, if that had not been made public because of the viral video of the confrontation, they would have probably put that guy in prison.
Yeah, and what they're saying is there is an inordinate, how you want to say this, a inordinate percentage of a certain class of people in prison and jail. Therefore, we need to rectify that situation.
He pleaded. His name is Daniel Penny. He pleaded guilty to second-degree manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide.
Okay.
So he pleaded guilty. This particular article does not have his sentencing. It's from June. I'll see if I can find some. But yeah.
Well, anyway, if you know the story of that guy, he was trying to help. He didn't go on that subway train looking for a fight.
Right.
He stepped in because this guy, the video shows and the testimony was that this guy was trying to keep people from yep. being harmed.
Yep.
So he was trying to, he as a last resort, he felt he needed to hold the guy.
Yeah.
Well, the guy died.
Yep.
He got convicted. So he pled guilty.
He pleaded guilty and,
so we don't know sentence.
Yeah, but
I'm just saying, if you want to know why there's so much recidivism,
yeah.
it's because these people view race as a factor. And though if you're a certain race, then you don't deserve to go to prison.
Brent just corrected me. He says he's seen articles where this guy pleaded not guilty. So maybe I misread that, but let me...
We'll try to update our listeners.
By tomorrow?
Not guilty. Not guilty. I'm sorry. He pleaded not guilty, so he's okay. got a trial coming up. My bad. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everybody.
Okay, you're going to have to sing for us then, Steve.
I'll play that clip again. Okay.
Sing and dance.
Okay. All right. Have a great day, everybody. See you tomorrow.